Revolutionary talk for revolutionary people. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Good morning. Welcome to Medicine on Call. This is Dr. George, and I have a really special guest who I really love having on my show, and I hope that she'll consent to come back on again. I'm pre-asking for the future. This is Dr. Ileana Johnson. We had a conversation a few weeks back because I think we really are ignorant about what the rhetoric is. We talk about democratic socialism, Common Core, all these things that are coming to pass that they sound good. In theory, we were being pushed towards these things. The Democratic Party is moving left at hyperspeed, and they're saying the things they think people want to hear. You cannot get something for nothing. I've said it on my show multiple times, but I've never really lived it. And I wanted to have a guest on. We were talking before the show started about people pontificating without knowing what they're talking about. They don't live it. They haven't experienced it. They're speaking from somewhere out in the boondocks. And I'm tired of people telling me what I should think, yet they really don't know anything, but they're just doing talking points. So Dr. Johnson is someone who's lived in a socialism, I'm not sure of communism, but I know socialism system. And when Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton are spouting off about freebies and people are sucking, you know, drinking the Kool-Aid, we need to actually understand what that will mean for our country. We're making moves that we cannot reverse. And if we make a bad choice for this election, I think America will be gone as we know it. So I wanted to thank you, Dr. Johnson, for coming back on the show. I want my guests to know that you're not just a professor, you're a speaker, you're an author. You speak about this constantly, and welcome.
Oh, good morning. Thank you so much for having me again, Dr. George. I really appreciate it. I wanted to tell you just a quick story, if I may.
Mm-hmm.
I don't usually like to go to Amazon to see what people say about my books, but I went recently and looked at some of the comments for my UN Agenda 21 environmental piracy, and a couple of the highly liberal commenters, one from Oregon and one from New England, compared me to Ayn Rand, and I took that as a compliment, although it was not meant as a compliment. So on that note, I wanted to quote a very, very short two-sentence that Ayn Rand said, that communism proposes to enslave men by force, socialism, and by vote. And so it is merely the difference between murder and suicide. So a lot of people misunderstand what communism is and socialism is, and
mm-hmm.
I thought she has put it so aptly. One is by force, and one is by vote. So But anyway, and to make a long story short, the two commenters were saying that I'm a terrible writer, and but they're using my work for research.
Wow. Just goes to show the depth of the ignorance, doesn't it?
Yes, it's just astounding. As we were mentioning earlier, probably some of these people were my D students, or some of them whom I failed, because they are utterly not understanding any economics, and they certainly don't know their history.
Isn't that the key? It's knowing what came before and knowing the history. And we're seeming like we're going down the same path to repeat it on so many fronts. You know, we're losing our freedom of speech. We're losing our freedom of association, of worship. And the government is becoming father, mother, you know, confessor, everything. And the good of the many does not outweigh the needs of the few. It doesn't really work that way. You end up losing on all fronts if you're an individual. Is that an apt way to think about it?
I think so. As a matter of fact, most of the civilization that we have today, it is because of people who were allowed to be individuals, not part of the collective. What worries me when you mentioned earlier, there has been a legislation filed in Mississippi in 2015,
mm-hmm.
which has been reintroduced this year. It's House Bill number 4 that is now going to set standards for parental accountability. And this sort of rings very true and very worrisome, because we had government interference in parental managing of their children under our socialist slash communist state in Romania. and they would come intrusively on unexpected visits every week. They wanted to make sure that my mom diapered me properly, I was fed properly, and kids were actually taken away if in someone's opinion, the child was not taken care of properly. Mm-hmm. And who is to decide what the needs of one child are as opposed to another after the basic needs have been met, such as food, shelter, and love? So it's very, very scary.
Well, I think there's actually examples of that here, where parents who, for whatever reason, don't want to vaccinate their child, they've had CPS come in and seize their children as well. And, you know, the questions that get asked on health forms, meaningful use, and what goes on in the classroom, you can expect a visit from CPS if your child mentions something about their parent. You know, do they have guns in the home? There's all sorts of questions and data mining that's going on, and it seems so innocuous, but somebody's taking note of this, and it's going into a database. And from a medical perspective, it's happening every time you go to see your doctor. Every time you're a senior citizen and somebody comes to your home, they fill out health questionnaires for your insurance company. That's not in a vacuum. It's being used. And my fear is this going to be used against you.
Oh, of course. Here's a direct quote from this proposed bill, which is paragraph number 2. Each report card for students in kindergarten through grade 12 shall include a section in which the teacher grades parental involvement as satisfactory, in need of improvement, or unsatisfactory, end of quote. I don't know about you, but I've had children in school, and some of their teachers were highly inadequate. I mean, they had some really good teachers, but mm-hmm. some of them were horrible, and they were drunks, and they used drugs, and they were immoral. Do I want such a teacher to grade parental involvement? And many people don't realize that, as you mentioned, this illegal data mining includes portions of data on the parents of the students. And the question is, will this data mining stop at the parents? Or will it expand to grandparents, aunts, uncles, neighbors, et cetera?
Mm-hmm.
I saw a column about China, which by 2020 will have a system in place to track each person and their family, friends, coworkers, and they will make it a game to coerce individuals into collective thinking because your score will impact those within your universe and vice versa. So this score is going to determine access to jobs, loans, basically transforming a credit score into a conformity score, or mm-hmm. we kind of jokingly call Common Core conformity score. And so, but in the standards, even if you impose minimal, whose standards are these, and what will the standards actually measure, mm-hmm. educationally speaking? If the standards are not your standards, how long are you willing to have your child, quote-unquote, educated within the system? If the standards measured are behavioral, for example, or maybe they're emotional, maybe they're attitudinal, and they're not assessing the learning process, how long are you willing to have your child, quote-unquote, educated within the system? And I mean by that indoctrinated. So who are you going to turn to within the local system, which is being taken over by outside forces?
Mm-hmm.
Who are you turn to restore education within the education process? So it's very scary because I remember under living 20 years under socialism, communism, we had grades for behavior. And if you fail that, you had to repeat the year. And your parents were called once a month to school and trashed in front of the entire student body and other parents who were also brought there by force what a bad parent you were because your child was not doing well in school.
Okay, let me stop you for a second. So you can pass your grades, you can pass your courses, but if you fail behavior, you would have to be left back?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, wow.
That's the good scenario. The bad scenario is that you are taken to a school for juvenile delinquents. And if you were not one before you got there, once you got there with other kids who may have been juvenile delinquents, you become one.
Oh, gee whiz. Okay, let's tease this out. Common Core, where did it come from? Is this a UN-driven system? Did it start off with No Child Left Behind? I mean, it seems to me from the time I graduated, which is not that long ago, to now, there's been a complete 180 in what kids learn, in the methods that are used to teach them, in the socialization of learning. It is always an individual pursuit. You were engaged in challenging yourself in my school. It's not that way anymore. How did this all get started?
Well, as you know, as a former educator, I taught for 30 years, we had FAD after FAD in education that were devised by one college professor or another from the College of Education around the country. And they were really meant to standardize everybody into one little neat block, even though teaching is an art, and then students have different levels of intelligences and interests, and that's according to research from Harvard, from Howard Gardner. But anyway, this Common Core, on the other hand, is more onerous because it does come from the United Nations, and it's based on the European standards, which were, by the way, adopted by 45 states, and there was no parental or teacher input into this adoption. It was made under confidentiality agreements without public debate. The standards were not tested, they were not tried, they were not proven, and they were not certainly internationally benchmarked as they claim in documentation. And it's also nonstop ads all over the place. And to bait states into doing this, and states are always short for money, they received $4.35 billion worth of grants through the president's stimulus package. Mm-hmm. And it was called a race to the top. And they had very short time to apply and receive these grants. But once they did, they were locked into the Common Core. And the core standards were designed for an industrial model school. And they claimed that they were kind of rigorous, even though they can't tell you what makes for rigorous or non-rigorous standards or non-rigorous standards. And there were several individuals and groups or players involved in these standards, such as, if I may quote a few, obviously the 45 governors, Jeb Bush, Mike Huckabee, school officer, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, which donated $200 million in 2012 of their own money, Achieve Incorporated, Fordham Institute, the National Governors Association, the U.S. Department of Education, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, surprise, surprise, mm-hmm. Foundation for Excellence in Education, and the Council of Chief State School Officers.
The usual players, huh?
The usual players. And there were actually 30 people who developed the standards, and only five of them were actually remotely attached to education, and two of them were actually college professors. And these are the five who actually refused to sign the standards once they were completed because they said, this is not going to improve education at all. It's going to dumb down our children. And so they went ahead with them without their signatures, with only 25 of them. And I think one of them was Andrew Hacker, professor emeritus at Queens College, and Mark Tucker, I think it was a math professor and an English professor.
This is outrageous. So they've turned the entire education system upside down based on people who are not in the classroom. This sounds so familiar to medicine, who never taught a student, who have no idea what it takes, the art of teaching, just like the art of medicine. I see so many parallels with this, and I want to explore them further when we come back. Let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call. Welcome back to Medicine on Call. We're having an important conversation with Dr. Ileana Johnson, author of Echoes of Communism and Liberty on Life Support, which I love these titles. And we're speaking about the ties and the it's like a network, a spider web of these interests and these people trying to control every aspect of our life. And if you can control someone's thought, what they believe, and you change it from being freedom is important, my life pursuit for whatever God put me on this earth to do is what's important, to me being part of a cog, being part of a Borg hive, just sublimating my gifts because someone else feels bad, or I took it from somebody else, so I need to, you know, I have white privilege or whatever they're calling it now. It's just ridiculousness that we're dealing with on so many levels. And I know we're going to talk about a lot of things, but I just want to get your take quickly on this education fiasco, Black Lives Matter, coming into various colleges, and we're going backwards. I mean, University of Connecticut now has a black-only dorm. Is that not segregation? I mean, I can't even believe that we're even having these conversations. It's like you've gone backwards in time to the 50s, and they're trying to tell you you've advanced.
Well, I totally agree with you. We are regressing, and we are returning to segregation. And I remember I retired in 2008, and throughout the 2000s, my students would always ask me, why do we have all these demographics in the college textbooks, particularly in economics? Why can we just not talk about Americans in general? Why do we have to have Hispanics? Why do we have to compare black Americans to white Americans and so forth? And they were very unhappy, and most of them were highly liberal students. And I said, well, ask the people who write the textbooks who are liberals, which we now call progressives. And, of course, that answer did not suffice to them, but it's true. All the books are written by college professors who are progressives. And, of course, there's going to be a certain vein of bias in what they write. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned control, and you're right. Control started a long time ago with education. If you take control of what people read and listen to and what children learn in school 24/7, you pretty much shape their minds, and that's where we are today. You control religion, all of this leads to eventual socialism. You control the talking points of this class warfare, which you divide the people into wealthy and the poor, and you create a lot of discontent, and that makes it easier to take away from, or so-called tax from, the wealthy to support the poor, who some of whom truly are down on their luck, but a lot of them just refuse to work. There's just generational welfare mentality. And when you put people on welfare, you take control of every aspect of their lives, food, housing, income. And there was a form of welfare under socialism, communism, because everything was subsidized, and they received certain money for having an X number of children, and to basically keep them under control. You control guns. If people don't have the ability to defend themselves from the government, that's socialism. We certainly didn't have any guns. As far as debt, the more debt you have to an unsustainable level, and we're at $19 trillion right now and over $120 trillion with the unfunded liabilities, you're thus able to increase taxes, and you're creating more poverty. And, of course, poverty has been increased tremendously in the last 10 years, and even progressives are admitting that people are generally poorer than they were 10 years ago, and not just black people, white people as well. And, of course, last but not least is health care. You control health care, and you control the people. And all of these are elements of socialism, communism.
And collectivism as well, or is that an umbrella that these two styles of government fall under? Because it's really just like a small group, a bureaucracy, a crony class, which gets to suck the life out of everybody else. You're basically working for them to stay in power.
Oh, sure. And collectivism is just another euphemism for communism, because you're supposed to work for the collective. It comes from the Latin word communis, which means shared. And I can tell you that we did not share anything in practice under socialism or the incipient communism we had. It was all owned by the Communist Party, which was the government. Mm-hmm. We did not own anything. There was no middle class. We were all equally poor and equally miserable, whether we were doctors, lawyers, teachers, mechanics. Mm-hmm. We were all equal. And there was nothing we could do about it. It was such a strong form of all across the board enslavement that nobody had any will to fight. Mm-hmm. And this went on for decades and decades, and the tides did not turn until we had a military coup.
Wow. And we're in the process of moving towards that. Is there such a thing, as Bernie Sanders says, of democratic socialism? or is that just a euphemism, just to make it sound good?
That's just another euphemism that they've come up with. The words associated have been kind of thrown around for quite some time now. But no, there's no such thing. If you have too much democracy, you're going to have chaos and anarchy. So there is no such thing. And you can see what the Black Lives Matter have created around the country and the destruction in cities like Baltimore and Ferguson and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because young people are so attracted to Bernie Sanders because all they hear is free college, and they hear maybe free pot, and that's about it. To be frank with you, they have no idea of history. They don't know what socialism is. They just think that everybody's going to be equal and it will just be great, but they don't want to give up their private property. They don't understand that socialism entails collective ownership and management of the means of production and distribution of goods. So that means they would only get what the government thinks they need.
Mm-hmm.
So they just don't understand that humans cannot cooperate for the common good to such a large extent because selfishness intervenes. Period.
Always. And we see it actually unfolding right in the healthcare system right now. We've been told that it's under the Affordable Care Act, everybody's getting access to quality healthcare. You can get something for nothing. You're covered, and you know somebody else is basically paying for it in these subsidies from the government. And I don't know if you saw this article, but there's an article that came out about millionaires finding a loophole within Obamacare so that they can get a subsidy and not pay the full freight of the insurance plan. So there's always some scam, some game going on where they make it sound like everybody's benefiting, but it's always only one section or one subgroup that gets the lion's share. Everybody gets nothing. They're spending so much time with paying doctors to talk about end-of-life decisions, extra time spent talking to patients about their hospice, you know, whether they should get treatment and access to cancer treatment. That's where the resources are going. They're not going towards innovative care. They're not going towards really prevention per se either. And it's about vaccinations and losing your medical freedom. And it's really not what everybody thinks it is. It's totalitarian medicine basically at this point.
Yeah, I agree. And I think most of these young people look at Europe as a model of socialism, which is sort of a form of Fabian socialism. And we do have elements of socialism in our own economy. But it's they don't understand because they don't understand economics. They don't know how horribly bankrupt these people are.
Mm-hmm.
All across. For example, in Denmark, they've had for decades now free college education, and not only that, but the students receive about $1,000 stipend for every month if they were in school. So, of course, that gave them the incentive to drag out school for 6 to 10 years for a four-year degree. So now they passed a law where they're making it compulsory that they finish in 4 years instead of 6 to 10 years because they just frankly can't afford it anymore. And people don't understand that you can't get something for nothing, that there's an opportunity cost to every decision. Even
mm-hmm.
a person who goes and forages in a trash can in the street, a homeless person, still has an opportunity cost to that foraging. Their time is worth something else that they could do with it, but they don't understand because they don't have basic economics. They don't understand opportunity cost, that you either make decision A or decision B, and if you don't assume personal responsibility, obviously you're going to become a slave to government because the government will make the decision for you.
That is an excellent point. I have nothing else to add to that except let's just take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
Health insurance was the promise of Obamacare.
But for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose, and with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. You know, I think, you know, we're having an important conversation on so many levels because it's about personal choice. You know, I understand people don't want to take risk. I get that. But you don't want to have any responsibility at all for your life. You want somebody to micromanage you from the time you're born to the time you die. Is anybody, human being, that's against human nature, in my opinion, that you would just cede your authority, the power over your own body, the power over your own thought, the power over your children's ability to live their life, and it's okay with you? Is that, am I being a little dramatic, or is that what we're talking about?
It is what we're talking about, and I do remember as an elementary school kid, I was in first grade, and I already knew how to read and write. They put us in these very depressing wooden benches, and you had to sit at attention with the hands behind your back, and you had to do your multiplication tables or whatever. And I was so bored out of my skull, I would just walk out of the room and walk home. That's how independent I was. And they tried to crush my spirit time and time again throughout school, and they haven't succeeded. I was punished. I was beaten, spanked, because they corporal punishment was allowed in school.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents were belittled and so forth. I was just lucky that I didn't say anything I wasn't supposed to. Otherwise, they would have taken my parents away like they did other classmates. Their parents would disappear overnight. And I don't understand why Americans want that kind of situation at all. I mean, they have literally the best system and the best in the world and the best standard of living, and they can do whatever they want. I spend my first 20 years of my life within probably a 30-mile radius where I was born. Why? Because we couldn't afford to go anywhere else. We had to take public transportation, and even that was too expensive. And we weren't allowed to move without the government's permission.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine that. You're trying to pick up and move to another state because you lost your job, but you have another job somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't do that under socialism. They don't allow you because they micromanage the population. And they did so even in Germany until recently. They actually have a special office of registration. So if you move on a new street, within 7 days, you have to register with this office. And if you don't, they go to your neighbors and ask them about you, or your neighbors are supposed to turn you in.
It's amazing. I had no idea. But it kind of, I mean, this is a little off the track, but now I can kind of understand how, especially with the migrant situation in Germany, how people are so passive because they've already ceded their authority to the government, pretty much. So they don't even have a backbone to fight for themselves or their family, or specifically their women and children.
Yeah, they're not even defending their own women who are being raped. So I think they're more protected in the countries in Europe that have been until recently communist, because people have developed that finally fighting back spirit. But in all these Western so-called democracies with their multiculturalism and stupid tolerance, they're not even defending their own women, which is outrageous, in my opinion.
Oh, I agree. And children, for that matter.
And children.
They're under siege. And I, potentially, with the same political correct, you know, rhetoric and society that we're moving towards, and the open policy, open floodgate policy that we have in our country, do you think that that could happen here?
Oh, absolutely. It is happening. It's just happening on a smaller scale and not as quickly because of we're not as close to the Middle East, but it is happening under the cover of darkness and people just don't know, and all of a sudden they found themselves overnight with a large community of migrants next to them. And if you ever have time to Google this video, YouTube video on Calais, France, finally some lady began to speak out, and she's describing exactly what life is like in the formerly beautiful town of Calais, France, which is like a sewer today.
I actually did see that video. It's an eye-opening video. And, you know, where I read an article, yesterday, that they're trying to use the U.S. bases, the military bases, as orphanages for unaccompanied minors that are coming across from the southern border. Now, whether you're for immigration or not, I don't think anybody should be for children ending up in a military base to fend for themselves without any parents. You know, they're just going to be a free-for-all. And what are these kids going to become when they become adults living in that kind of, it's like Lord of the Flies. I can't imagine this is a really good thing.
I totally agree. And unfortunately, we're not walking towards socialism, but we're just running. And I can understand the form of economics or government as being attractive when it was invented or described in the late 18th century and early 19th century, because it was sort of a result, a natural result of the economic and social changes that were attached or associated with the Industrial Revolution. And if you remember, there were some populations that were extremely mistreated by employers.
Sure.
So I can understand that. But that's not the case today. Yes, we have concentration of wealth in a lot of, a few, I should say, oligarchs that are very wealthy and powerful, but they also do pay a lot of taxes in the country. And how long do you think, if we were to confiscate all their wealth 100%, how long do you think it would last at the current rate of spending that we have? Let's say maybe 60 days, 90 days. I even doubt it if it will last that long.
No, there is no magic. You can't confiscate something and everybody live, you know, everybody live off of it. You have to produce something.
Of course.
I mean, that's the bottom line. I think that the government is a big part of the problem because they've put their finger on the scale for these folks. And these big corporations are not really the ones that are the drivers of the economy. If you really are honest about it, it's the small business owner. It's the one that employs 2 and 3 employees across the country that really are the engines of the society and the economy. But the bottom line is they don't want any competition. I can talk to it from a medical perspective. The hospitals don't want competition from independent doctors, independent surgery centers. They want to be the only game in town so they can set the rate, have one place to go, and no competition. That's how they work it. And then the government helps them by by not allowing, for example, any certificates of need. So you can't open a facility that's going to be competition. That's what I dislike tremendously about the government. They just get out of the way, let, you know, the free market work. Have competition. It would put pressure on the on these big corporations to stop playing with us and messing with us. But, you know, I also take a step back. It's us, the consumer, that's part of the problem. If you want cheap crap and you keep buying from these places, they get bigger. We did it to ourselves with Walmart and all these other places. Instead of shopping with mom and pop in your own communities where you actually keep your money in your community instead of having it go offshore. So we need to make our own, we need to make conscious choices about where we put our money. And if we did that, because it's always follow the money, and they try to make us do it by fear and taxation, but ultimately no one has to put a gun to your head and say, go shop at this place, at this Walmart or wherever. You get to decide what that is. Is that one way to get out of this situation?
Well, it is possible, but we are so far in debt at this point. our national debt is the biggest threat to our national security, really, that it's going to take decades and generations before we start to recover, if ever. $19 trillion is not payable. How do you pay that much money? And all these unfunded liabilities, $120-plus trillion, how do you come up with that kind of money when your GDP is maybe in the single-digit trillions per year? I haven't checked lately to see how many goods and services we produce in a year. That would be our gross domestic product. But if you have in single digits and you have $19 trillion in debt, how are you going to pay that? And, of course, all these young people, the so-called millennials who are enamored with socialism, they are asking to eliminate private property. It is not possible to eliminate it because even under socialism and communism that I experienced, there still was haves and have-nots. The majority of people were have-nots because there was no middle class, and then there were the haves who happened to be upper-class, quote-unquote, members of the Communist Party. It is impossible to eliminate classes. There is no such thing as just a pie-in-the-sky utopian dream.
No. I think from what I've read and what I've historically seen, you only have two classes. And that, you're right, the haves and have-nots. And those that are part of the government or friends of are the ones that make out like a bandit, and everybody else is just supporting it in one way or another. I don't care if you're a doctor, lawyer, any professional, you become part of the lower part of the whole. You know, everybody's not equal, but you're all working towards keeping the system in place to hurt yourself. That is a very gray society. I can't imagine. I mean, there's got to be some spark still left in our country of people who get it. I think there's a silent majority, tell you the truth, that don't speak up, that don't like what's going on. And maybe this is what we're seeing in this election cycle on the Republican side, that people are just fed up with people trying to tell them it's okay, do the same thing, expect a different result. I don't think the Republican Party as a whole in the last, you know, probably forever, but really recently is doing anything in terms of their rhetoric and their voting stance. They're completely opposite. They're keeping the whole progressive agenda alive.
I agree. And Americans don't understand that they have the best standard of living in the world. They have the best lives. I've traveled extensively, and although other countries seem beautiful when they take trips to Europe, and they're enchanted by its history, the actual lives of the people are so much harder than the average American life. Even a person on generational welfare lives better and less worry-free than the average European who does probably their entire life have to rent a place, or they have to live with their parents, and upon the parents' death they inherit the small apartment or they inherit the rental, mm-hmm. because that's even passed on. Even rentals are passed on generationally now. That's how little space they have to themselves. And what does our government want to do? They want to stack and pack us, a la Agenda 21, into high-rise, mixed-use apartment complexes, just like they have in Europe. Was that necessarily a formula for success? I don't think so. I think Europe, the Western Europe, is highly bankrupt. It's just not. It's not showing itself because they're printing a lot of money.
So we're seeing it. It's a facade, basically. And on that note, let's take a small break and return for our final segment. You're listening to Medicine on Call. Welcome back to Medicine on Call. In the next 8 minutes or so that we have left, Dr. Johnson, I know it's a big topic, but you mentioned Agenda 21. And I don't think people still to this day really understand what that is. Can you distill it to for us in the next few minutes just so we can get a clue?
Sure. It's Agenda 21, which was passed, signed in 1992 by 178 countries. It's a United Nations-driven control of all aspects of our lives and of business across the planet. It is the introduction of global socialism / communism via the linchpin word called sustainable development. It's sort of a euphemistic tool or word to create this new international economic order based on socialism, communism, after the overthrow of capitalism and the elimination of national identity and borders. It is what our dollar bill describes as Novus Ordo Seclorum, the New World Order. And, of course, now they've changed the name of the agenda from Agenda 21 to Agenda 2030 when they met in Paris this past December. And they call it now Agenda 2030. And in it, they state 17 goals of their agenda, which basically cuts down to the nitty-gritty. It's everything that all these progressives in our country, including politicians, talk about in their campaigns that they want to do to the United States. So it is a global effort, and you wonder, well, if countries are so different and at different levels of economic development, mm-hmm. how come they're all experiencing this at the same time? Well, the reason they are is because there are hundreds, if not thousands, of NGOs or non-governmental organizations that have become sort of an unelected government in various countries, a shadow government, and they have lots of money from billionaires and governments that they disseminate. They disseminate this money, and they get people trapped in the goals of Agenda 21. And they sign contracts and they cannot get out of, and the laws are being changed in lines with these 17 points of Agenda 2030. And I've noticed that some people have said, well, my book, UN Agenda 21, Environmental Piracy, is out of date. It is 4 years old, but it does state in every chapter everything I have found in my research that involves Agenda 21, whether it's in my own county or in another state or in another country, and that includes smart meters, smart water meters, smart gas meters, smart appliances, all of this surveillance without authorization, private property rights, mm-hmm. The elimination of suburbia, the elimination of housing, of sustainable agriculture. All of a sudden, it's considered unsustainable, and they want to replace the entire coal industry with these renewables, which is such a small percentage, there's no way you can do that to such a large economy such as the United States or many other large economies on the planet. So do we want to be in the dark like North Korea? I don't think so, but that's going to be the future. We're going there faster and faster.
And while we're making it trendy and we're making it, you know, politically incorrect to actually have a brain and think about and ask these questions, you would be shouted down in any kind of progressive, you know, environment. For you to even mention this would be a problem. I mean, they would come after you hooks and, you know, tooth and nail, would they not?
Oh, of course. They try to marginalize you. You're crazy. Eventually, they're going to put us in those asylums that, like they did under communism, and they treat us with psychotropic drugs. They actually have plans of laws in that vein. And just to kind of give you a taste of these goals that are considered for the good of the global humanity. They want to end poverty. They want to end hunger, healthy lives, vaccinate everybody, put ID tags under their skin, equitable quality education, meaning dumbed-down education, sort of like the International Baccalaureate that Americans think is such a great idea coming out of Geneva, Switzerland. They want to achieve gender equality, sustainable management of the lands, meaning move everybody over large swaths of land, let the government control it, and then we just grow our food in high-rise apartments on the rooftop, on balconies, and collect rainwater. You have to have sustainable energy, meaning you're going to be in the dark a lot. You're going to have sustainable economic growth, like the non-growth we've experienced in the last 8 years. Build resilient industrialization, meaning only things that they allow to be built and manufactured. Reduce inequality. Well, the way I see it, they've increased inequality with all this race-baiting rhetoric and Hispanic baiting rhetoric, make cities and human settlements more inclusive, and we already have laws about that from HUD. If we are not diverse enough, we have to build in between our homes apartments so we're more diverse. You have to have sustainable consumption, meaning somebody is going to tell you what you can and cannot consume. And, of course, climate change is very, very important, the climate change industry. You're going to have to sustainably use ocean, seas, and marine resources, meaning that you're not going to be able to fish or look for oil or look for other minerals in the seas unless they let you. They have to protect ecosystems. So EPA would be very important there, and look at the wildlands project map, and basically provide access to justice for all, meaning you're going to have a pretty much lawless society, basically develop this global partnership for sustainable development where you're just one kumbaya country, no history, no citizenship, you're a global citizen, and so forth. So it's very, very onerous. Is this how we want to live? I don't think so, but people are not informed and people don't have time to read.
No.
But I do.
And they also are being driven by their emotions. So, you know, you are a victim. You are a victim on steroids. Somebody took it from you. Somebody thinks they're better than you are, and so you need to equalize the situation. And really, you're signing your own, caste system. Emotionally, economically, physically. I mean, people start reading and stop having somebody from TV try to tell you how you should think. I mean, that's what it comes down to. You have to take personal responsibility at this point. Otherwise, it's your fault when something happens. You cannot blame your neighbor, somebody from a different race, somebody from a different country. It's not their fault. It's yours for letting this thing go down the path while they tell you should like it. It's your fault. And until we get that into our minds, that we are responsible for our own fate, we're going to be moving as fast as you just described down this path from hell, I think. What's the best way for our listeners to reach you?
Well, I have a blog, RomanianConservative.com. I have a website, IlianaJohnson.com. And, of course, I have four books at Amazon, and I write for CanadaFreePress.com, usually 2-3 columns a week.
Well, you know, I'm going to be very selfish, and again, I really want you to love to have you back on the show. We always seem to scratch the surface, and it's such a huge topic, and it's so important because there's so many moving parts. I hope you'll come back.
Oh, I will. Thank you for having me this time again.
Oh, it's a pleasure. If you could, stay on the line after the show. I want to speak with you. And thank you for listening to Medicine on Call. Have a great week.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.